This is going to take a lot of practice.
I'm just sitting here watching the waves go.
And that's fine. It should take a lot. It should take a lot of practice.
I need my phone because then I can look.
We should
stuff
be close
up
to our mics, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean.
But then forget they're there.
I had an idea. When we get enough reps of this.
You're almost lips to the mic right now. Do you do that when you sing live?
Well, for the safety of others, a lot of times I back way off. But then the sound
what
and people
mean,
out there
safety?
Go like this. Because I sing so loud. Mm. I sing like there's no microphone
you
sometimes.
You do not need.
Sometimes I do not need a microphone. So I had an idea to kick it off. Okay. Andy.
Mm. Let's hear
tell
it.
Tell us about that story that you wrote.
Yeah.
The free, for the
on
free.
On the free side.
On the free side.
I always loved gym class. My undiagnosed ADD made sitting at a desk all day torturous. So every recess or gym class felt like a prison break. Sometimes the wait for recess or gym got to be too much. It led to thoughts like, well, it's just one old lady up there and 30 of us. I mean, if I and at most one, maybe two of my homies were to, say, shove her old ass in a closet, the door to the playground was unguarded and close enough. Well, the entire class could have escaped undetected if we timed it right. Then I'd consider the consequences. I'd never be able to go home again. All my He-Man stuff was there. So now we're talking about a very risky secondary operation to extract my Masters of the Universe collection from the second floor of a farmhouse with my parents on high alert, primed to punish like it's Old Testament times. So I sat there and spaced out. Watched the wind stir the leaves in the trees on the free side of the window. And invariably retreat into my go-to daydream. It wasn't terribly original, as I'd essentially co-opted the plot from Die Hard, substituting myself for Bruce Willis, of course, and switching the setting from a skyscraper to my elementary school. So, evil German terrorists in my elementary, up to me and only me to save the goddamn day. Other than these minor adjustments, I pretty much stuck to the script. Crawling around in the ductwork, dropping down and taking out the terrorists one by one until the climactic showdown with a big bad guy in the boiler room, because it's steamy down there, dramatic. I might rip a pipe off the wall and throw it through the dude's chest, just like Schwarzenegger in Commando. You know, I don't really remember those details now, but if I were to rewrite it today, I'd definitely involve some lunch ladies. Steaming hot tater tot casserole to the face. Econo-sized government-issued cheese to the back to bring him to his knees. Bitch slap him with a spatula and pizza cutter to the throat. I don't mean to suggest that my version was better, but I will say that the love story woven into the action was just objectively more fully developed. I loved the same girl all through my elementary experience, and she gave me just enough encouragement to keep the flame alive. But for reasons I'd never understand, she just wouldn't commit, or as I saw it, submit, to what was clearly destiny, staring in her stupid, beautiful face. She was an uncrackable code. But in my daydream, saving the school from German terrorists did the trick, and the hero got the girl. The transition from action fantasy back to stationary desk was always rough. With the old lady up there blathering, feeding us some sanitized version of European settlement in the New World, or scratching out some crude, chalky diagram describing numerators and adverbs. While the wind stirred the leaves on the free side, and He-Man hung out in Castle Grayskull in a little room on the second floor of a farmhouse, not far from Okoboji, with a killer view into Eternia.
When I started listening, so anytime you guys record anything and put it over the waves, I get kind of nervous, and then I go to my save it mode. Like I'm going to save this till all the work is done. No one's around. I instantly go into that mode.
So you can give it your complete and undivided attention?
Yeah, and it's like I'm always giving myself something to look forward to.
Ah.
Always. Somehow geared that way. So the story you wrote, lyrical, verse. I identified very closely with the level, the depth that you would go into that fantasy when times were bleak, which is often.
Every day.
Similar. Small country upbringing, country school.
It was a good school, too. I mean, I don't mean to make it sound like an actual prison. It's just the emotional sort of...
No, but you were a bonkers little boy.
Right.
And it doesn't matter how good school is. It's still a desk, and it's still like you have to write 20 sentences, and then recess is only 15 minutes. So I related very closely to the depth of the fantasy of John McClane being heroic, and how that would, like, the girls then would like you. And mine was Indiana Jones. That was my go-to fantasy always, that would, like, make the girls like me if I would just swing through the woods heroically, evading the Nazis and the natives, and get the idol, put a bag of sand on there.
That is what every middle school girl wants, actually.
For sure.
Speaking for girls.
Indiana Jones? No. Real quick, and then please continue.
Gold.
Maybe Chris should talk at some
gold
point,
too.
But you make your whip.
I'm getting there.
You make your whip out of the rope or whatever you've got lying around, right?
Right.
And fucking zero times out of 50,000 do you ever get
never.
That thing over
impossible.
Something and it catches.
Impossible.
And then you can swing.
No, it's impossible.
Never.
You have to tie it and walk and walk back. Then look over your shoulder because they're gaining on you. And then grab it because it's like set there on a hook. And then swing over nothing, just the ground. So while Andy and I were, while John McClane was saving everyone in the building, and while Indiana Jones was evading the natives with the idol.
Blow darts.
And we were sure that this kind of, these sorts of heroics were going to get the girls.
Did it work?
Were we right?
No. No. I don't think so.
What did the ladies
Were you
want?
Right?
How old were you during that fantasy?
It was an ongoing thing. I mean, probably started that kind of stuff very early, second grade-ish, and on through fifth, you know, the rest of elementary.
You put me into like 10, 11, 12 with your story. That's where I went with your words and went to my Indiana Jones thing.
Huh.
So
it went that far. You're talking middle school almost, pushing middle school, fifth grade.
Yeah, pushing middle school.
But so
able to see some cool
you
movies.
Guys back then were thinking rescuing is the way to go.
I said it wasn't original. I was co-opting plots that were fed to me.
No, I'm really. I'm curious because
the fantasy is rescue.
Those were the plots.
The fantasy is be heroic.
Why did that resonate? Like, what was it about that?
Well, when we were talking about this or texting about it, I guess that occurred to me that most of those movies, girls were being rescued. So you guys were like, "Oh, I get to be this."
This is how it's done.
And then my role is wear a shiny dress and wait for someone to come to the boat to
be
get
hot.
Me out. Or, yeah, try to be hot.
And be in terrible peril.
And be in, yes, be need something.
But if you're Indiana Jones's love interest, a lot of tension there usually. She's very sassy. She acts like she doesn't really care for him that much.
Is she saving
does.
Him, though?
No, she's not. I'm just saying.
Not usually.
Maybe sometimes you're playing hard to get.
There's a pretty strong theme. And... the kneading thing is huge because I still have it up here that women have to knead something in order to get attention. So it's not like you just extract that stuff out from pop culture. It's like, first I need to be prettier and skinnier. And then also men like to rescue. So I better need something pretty good that they can, you know, come and save me from, or you know
on
what
the
I mean?
Flip side, you can be you're allowed to be vulnerable. Being too vulnerable isn't cool. I get that. And being helpless and being portrayed that way, that's not great. But having to be a hero and competent and handle everything all the time, or have that, idea drilled into your mind is not healthy either.
You always know the right move because you're Indiana Jones and you always know the right
move. And you're never sorry.
And never sorry. No, yeah. Yep. No apologies. And yeah, it doesn't matter that your feet are bleeding either.
God damn it. You walk over the broken glass. You wrap it up with some toilet paper. And you carry on.
Gennaro, his wife takes her maiden name. Holly Gennaro.
Are you
not impressed?
Are you giving us actual actress names?
No, that's her.
I think her name
character
is
name.
Bonnie something.
In Die Hard.
I think.
How does Dan retain this?
I remember that her maiden name is Gennaro. She drops McLean and goes back to Gennaro. Is it Holly?
I feel like it was Holly. Maybe.
She still loves him, but she just can't take his renegade ways anymore.
So what was your original question?
The question was,
I don't think
I were pretending to walk over glass with bare feet or swinging on the monkey bars like Indiana Jones. Were you impressed at all?
Or what were you daydreaming about?
More importantly, was it working?
What was your fantasy?
Was it working? No.
It was not working.
Girls like breakdancers.
Oh my God. What we should have been doing.
Yep. And the girls liked the ones who would talk to them, like without other boys around. Maybe hold hands.
Oh, come on now. Oh. That's embarrassing. Yeah. Okay.
So connection, what women generally tend to gravitate for. I mean, I think, if I'm remembering correctly.
And nobody taught you that. That's just what you...
Sense of humor. I always felt like that was the thing. Like, if I had anything going for me, I could make people laugh, make the ladies laugh. Mm. That, was something. But then the rest of my game was bullshit.
Right.
Was tying ropes around branches.
Yeah, but after the jokes.
Did you really think that was going to get the girls, though? Did you really think that?
The tying the rope, I mean...
Was it just a ritual of, building confidence?
The tying the rope and all the acting part, that's what you do in private when... Because if anybody catches you doing that, your life is over. Right. If anybody catches you pretending to be Indiana Jones...
Yeah.
That's the stuff you did.
You have to move out of town.
By yourself.
Yeah.
One of my moves was on the hottest of summer days. This is like 6th, 7th grade for sure. Hottest of summer days possible. I would wear pants and work boots. I'd wear like the whole Indiana Jones get up, like my Halloween costume. And like I didn't have a leather jacket, but I had like a fatigue jacket. And I would just go romp around in the woods and act it out like... The Wisconsin, the Merrimack Woods became a jungle, and I was climbing and getting the drop on people and running.
That wasn't even about getting a girl at that point.
No, that's just pure fantasy. But there is that fantasy part of gallantry and coolness and all that.
I think that...
Monday through Friday, that's going to work.
I can't speak...
This is weekend, Dan. In the trees.
My friends and I had one friend in particular that would do the exact same thing that you guys did. So we would go down to the creek, or we would go to the woods, or we would go and basically pretend like we had to save something or...
This was a boy?
No.
Okay.
Girl. Hmm. And so there, like the element of adventure...
Did you call her sir?
I don't know if it was just exclusive to boys entirely, because that was what we did. Like when we got together to play, that's what we did. Or dance and sang and pretended like we were on stage.
I wonder if it's different for girls now that, there was a lot of discussion around like the new Star Wars, Rey, the lead action character is female. And there's, girls are getting introduced more towards like, hey, you can kick ass too. You can be the lead. You can be the hero. So perhaps it's fueling more young girls to space out.
Maybe. And we also used to play Dukes of Hazzard a lot.
But you weren't Daisy?
I can't remember if it was, if we fought to be Daisy or if no one wanted to be Daisy. If we fought to be her, it wasn't because she was a great character. It's because she was a pretty,
Tom Wopat, native Wisconsin boy, isn't it? Shout out to Tom Wopat. has had a second career singing in like dinner theater places. Oh. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't.
I think a Me Too might have touched Tom.
Had a little bit of a Me Too.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Sometime after Django, was he in Django or was he in The Hateful Eight?
He was in one of the
Tarantino movies. It was probably the peak of his career.
I haven't seen all the Tarantino movies.
He's in one of them. He's a roughneck. Not Django.
We need a research department for this kind of stuff, like Joe Rogan's got.
Listening to those stories about the wild imagination and sort of drifting into the landscape of your mind as a kid, daydreaming about other things and sitting in your desk and living in a world full of grown-ups kind of brought an old song I wrote to mind. It's called Small Moments.
Are open. Mine was free and wild and hoping, inventing worlds I could believe in, playing, dreaming without reason. From the outside, I heard voices telling. Life is rough. Sit right there now, child, you hush. And don't think I didn't notice. For years I wondered if I let them down, would they still love me? If I said I'm good, would my soul agree? If I close my eyes and pretend to dream, would I see the world isn't what it seems? If I showed you tears, would I turn to dust? If I let you in and decide to trust? If I close my eyes and pretend to dream, What I see the world isn't what it seems.
I'd be very curious to hear, because I don't have a ton of experience with spoken live performance in front of big audiences like theater. And how do you memorize all those lines and trust that you're going to have them in your mouth when you're on the stage? I feel like my mind would just go blank, and then you're on stage and you don't know what the fuck you're doing.
Part of it's simple. Simple answer is just reps. You know, like you do anything enough times, it becomes unconscious.
You were never in a play?
No. I didn't make it.
You didn't make the cut?
I didn't make it. It was a chorus part too.
You were so academically advanced.
I don't know.
Did that humble you a little bit? Bring you back down to earth?
It made me not try out for anything for like 10 years.
That sucks. That's, you know... This touches on another thing.
I was fragile.
It's tangent time.
Wait, what was the Eastern European school that you went to where you were all in boxes?
Palatine, Illinois.
Yeah.
Right.
Palatine. Correct. But this, right. Well, okay, yeah. So this was Palatine High School.
But big enough that just showing up is not ensure
2,000 people. 2,000 people is a lot of people.
Yes.
Palatine sounds like the evil Sith in Star Wars, by the way.
It basically was Death Star.
Palpatine, Palatine, sorry. That's where my mind goes.
North Suburbs?
Yeah, by IKEA.
Mm. Is that by Gurney Mills?
It's horrible. Horrible place.
Really? You have no love for home?
Oh, Lord. No. Well, the donuts are good. I mean, that's about all I have to say. Donuts and hot dogs in Chicago are...
They really are good.
They are... the best. Mm-hmm. But no, it's all shallow, consumer-driven strip mall, strip mall, and then like a little patch of nature preserve.
Did the mall always suck for you, or did you dig it when you were in high school and then realize it sucked
later?
Yeah,
of course. I mean,
yeah,
we would go hang out at the mall and walk around and eat cheese fries and do the...
Prank the security guard. I was never a badass enough to do that, but I had a cousin who was fearless.
Nick?
His brother John.
Oh boy.
Who is like the maestro of pranks.
Really? And what's his best prank?
He was a genius.
No, well, top three.
It's not hard. This stuff is legendary within my family, right? So his greatest talent, probably, we're all familiar with the underarm fart. Most guys really have to like crank the arm and get, you know, to squeak out some fart noises. It was a little bit gross, the buildup and like the way that he executed it, but he would spit into his hand.
Ugh.
Okay, sorry, but you asked. And then he would slide it in there and just...
Was this before armpit hair? Or?
Good question.
Thank you.
I think it probably was, but he maintained... If anything, his technique grew through puberty, like, you know, like a seasoned sax player, like Sonny Rollins, late career, just deeper, more expressive.
The timber. B-R-E. The timber of it was.
Right. So he didn't have to flap. He could just squeeze so subtly that you could barely tell he was doing it. But he produced such great volume and with subtle adjustments. I don't pretend to know how he did it, but like must have been like the angle of his hand, the cupping action, the amount of spit. Who knows? It was his gift alone.
His and his alone.
Yeah. No one I've ever heard even comes close
to it.
What
did it sound like?
Well, like real farts. That's the thing that was partially great about it. But like the whole range of real farts. He could give you anything.
I thought you were going to go for like he could play a song or it's just fart sounds.
Not just fart sounds, Adams. You know, like realistic, loud.
Food poisoning fart sounds.
Yeah, whatever you need. And he'd always pick genius opportunities to like break it out, like the moment in a movie between the what do you call it, the previews and the film, that silent moment. he'd blast one there. And then, you know, that was fantastic. I went to the Sears Tower with him once, which is what now the Wacker Tower.
It's like Chase Citibank Tower or something. I don't know.
Some corporate sponsored thing that changes all the time. But anyway, that elevator, right? I was in there with him and we knew it was coming.
How many people were in the elevator?
Packed.
And it's like 86 floors. It's a while.
It is a while.
It's fast.
It was when the Bulls won their last championship, Dan.
Oh, so probably busy.
Oh, yeah. It was jammed.
1998?
You'd know. Yeah. We're talking the Rodman Bulls, and we went.
It feels like 98 Bulls.
We love that team so much that we made the pilgrimage to Grant Park so that we could, you know, see the victory, celebration and parade and see the guys in person and celebrate with the city. And my brother climbed a greased light pole.
Oh, how did he do that? That's like another story.
I'm sorry. I need to focus. Okay. So during this whole adventure, we took a little side trip to this Wacker Sears Roebuck whatever tower, and we got in the elevator. Jeremy and I knew it was coming. All we had to do was be straight men, but I'm the worst fucking straight man ever. So I think I got away from him and just like turned toward the wall, and it, you know, the doors had barely closed before John just started ripping them out, and just he ran through like his whole repertoire on the way out. Nobody was amused. Nobody and they
that
thought that was
fun.
Except two old guys at the front. The two old guys thought that was fantastic. They appreciated it, you know?
Of course they did.
Yeah.
Oh my God. How is no one amused? How is no one amused at that? That's hilarious.
I don't know. But I mean, the guy's a goddamn legend, Jesus. You know? And for those of us who were there and witnessed it.
We're witness.
Is the armpit fart number one or number three of his greatest?
Ooh, are we counting up or counting down?
Are you building up to?
I think that was number one.
You know, yeah, it's hard to say with him. It's hard to say. I mean, maybe the others aren't as easily like encapsulated in one epic story, but he was a guy who could do every voice. Mm. He had Jim Carrey's double jointedness thing down where he could just like fold himself down on the floor and back up and everything. He had all the tools and he had the imagination and he was crazy musical, still is.
Huh.
You know, he got one of those guitar starter kits when he was like 11 or something. You'll love this. And I remember going to visit him in his little basement room, and he was one of those guys that without a single lesson put on Guns N' Roses, Metallica, stuff like that. That's what he was into, and he was riffing right along with it.
Oh my God.
Just using his ears and found it and was nailing it. I was like, ooh, not bad, John. That's pretty good. And he's my younger cousin, right? So I feel like I'm insecure. I'm threatened, but I'm also like amazed and proud of the guy. And
that's like one of those people that has insane talent and no idea like how they could put it all together to like get the glory that they deserve for all the talents, you know, like there's no job that's.
John. Yeah. I mean,
how does anybody do that? How does anybody corral the horses and get them pulling in the same direction and
good manager helps
feel it when it's time to let it out in the right place, in the right way. How does anybody find that?
Creative people or so artists? Actors, musicians.
Let's aim a little lower.
Oh.
Like us, maybe? Like people like us.
We are.
Regular people.
Musicians.
Air quotes. Regular people.
Speak for yourself, Dan. You may be regular.
No.
No, explain yourself. Go ahead.
I have under 100 million hits on YouTube total. I mean, just any of us that have a talent. That just made me think how long it took me to do anything like that out of just fear and anxiety and what if people don't like it and I'd had some bad experiences and stuff. So my playing guitar and stuff for the longest time, as you know, was just private. Only I knew about it. I wouldn't even like,
certainly,
I'd scarcely even tell people about it.
Was this after you guys had met?
No.
Or you were
prior?
I think that's how everyone starts playing privately. No one can hear me. I will only practice when no one's home. Like, at least, except for your weird family that is just
that it was a goddamn inclusive. Musical.
That's a huge, yeah.
It was a musical every time there's a family reunion or a birthday, for sure. There was a program.
Yeah, obviously.
It was, you know, you're born into it. But I was still in rural Iowa, and we can't overlook the fact that, like, a guy like Kurt Cobain, for whatever reason, he's coming to mind. He had the good fortune of being born around Seattle.
Uh-huh.
And that's a vibrant, you know, cultural sort of scene in America that we don't have anything, I mean, or I had no concept of.
Ditto.
When I was...
Nothing like Palatine. Nothing at all.
No IKEA meatballs anywhere near there.
I think environment is massive with creative stuff because for the songwriters group, that was the first time I really shared songs. And if they hadn't been supportive...
You were 20-something?
Yeah, after college.
You were 20-something?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If they hadn't been supportive and, yeah, more, you know, that sounds great. And really, there wasn't a whole lot of feedback of the negative kind because it was just like these little baby birds. And... You had to kind of keep the nest intact for that creative courage to grow.
We were all insecure. So, yeah, we weren't about to bash somebody else because we were empathetic enough even at that relatively young age to be like, well, you know, I don't want anybody to be too brutally honest with me if this sucks. So I'm going to find something nice to say about this, even if it kind of does suck in some cases.
Oh, my God.
We're not going to mention names.
No, of course.
There's times in life for that, though, where... That happens in school where you have to say something nice about.
Yeah, I was thinking.
Just crashed and died on the stage. Like, yeah, there's some real.
I'm not sure you can get to like a creative, thriving place unless there's at least one person who can say, you should keep doing this. That sounds pretty good. Mm.
Why do you need somebody else to tell you to believe in yourself, right? Like,
but
to validate, you need some validation.
What a great question, Andy.
I came from a pretty musical family, at least on my mom's side. Pretty notoriously,
I'm adding it to the list.
Kind of famously musical, like in Old Madison back in like the 40s and 50s. Not so much the Nath family jam at all the family things, but once in a while someone would like play the piano. And like I had an uncle that played accordion, and my mom sang and played a stand-up bass.
Really?
Her sister Wanda.
Your mom played the stand-up bass?
That's crazy.
You were destined to strap on Squire.
Oh my
god!
But
that maybe this is leading somewhere. Is that? And then her sister Wanda, her stage name was Wanda Starr, and like played around the bars and stuff in Madison. Played with this. I use quasi a lot. Played with this quasi-famous guy, Bobby Hodge, who had a few singles in like the 40s in the Midwest.
Name or stage name? Star.
Wanda Star is the stage name. Gotcha. Wanda Dickowicz. Far less
that
sexy.
That is not a stage
Wipe
name.
Off
we
that
know
microphone.
Why Star. Okay.
So, but...
Dickowicz.
We had all that...
Polish dicks.
It sounds invented.
Oh, my goodness.
I know it sounds made up. That's why it makes a great password or a great security question. So, but in tandem with that was my Uncle Mickey would argue with anyone about nothing, about the size of the grains in the salt shaker or whatever you were doing. He would say like, well, you should be doing it like this.
That's and
it would
not just a good creative like, environment.
Oppositional.
No.
It's so the opposite of what.
When I got older, when I got in my teens and later teens, early college years, and I brought my guitar home, I finally was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to sit down by Uncle Mickey and like play my guitar, and he's going to play the piano. And he was playing a number of these like songs from his wheelhouse, these old polka standards and stuff. And I was strumming along. And these songs are just like G, C, D, whatever. But I couldn't strum all the way up and down once without like a, no, that's a diminish this or that's a this. And it's just like, and that is a formative. Everything's formative.
How old? 20?
I was like 18, 19.
So for him to not recognize that you're a budding player and you need a little encouragement, Like that, I'm sorry, Dan, but that's the opposite.
Yeah.
My uncles were putting guitars in my hands and everything I played was...
And no matter what came out,
fantastic.
They were like,
yeah, you know.
Woo, woo.
Yeah.
So how did you get there then, if you didn't have any support?
So, then, you know, in the college years, some of my friends that I don't really keep in touch with anymore will remember when I first got my guitar for Christmas and I came back to school.
The Black Beauty?
Black Beauty, yeah. Black Beauty. The, needs a better name. The,
that's a great name.
We're working on it.
The first time I like took it out, I mean, I couldn't wait. As soon as everybody was drunk, it was time. And I literally said like, okay, we're going to play a 3-song set. And it was like, Patience, I Used to Love Her, But I Had to Kill Her. And, All I Want Is You.
All I Want Is You. Is that another GNR song?
You Too.
You Too. Okay.
So, oh,
when all I want is you.
Yeah. Okay. Any time that the guitar ever came out like late night like that, it was always a scarring experience because playing songs, these people don't know them. I mean, they do, I guess. They know them from what they've heard. But everybody just can't wait to be like, that's not how it goes. Or like, you forgot this part. And it just...
Really? Your friends were dicks.
I know. Just like, God.
Just mine were like, drunk and singing along. Like,
No. Is it me or what?
I don't know. And yeah. It's Jesus.
It just punched my inner rock star down. It just punched it down to the point where I was like, never again. Never again. I had one good experience. There was some good experiences. Like I took it to a wedding once and like... They shut off the jukebox and I played for a while and people were like getting into it. So there were some good memories with it, but it's mostly just people like, I don't like that song or like, that's not how it goes.
Do you know of something else?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Or people requesting songs that you can't play on an acoustic guitar for a guy who's been playing for a few weeks or a few months. Like, can you play Purple Haze or can you play Voodoo Child? Like, no, I can play Patience. I can play I Used to Love Her.
So
take it and be happy.
How did you get there then?
Live music.
That's another.
It was later in life. It was after we had kids.
Uh huh.
And that's the hilarious. Is that irony? Is that like when I was young and could do it, I wasn't around anybody that was like giving and loving and warm like the Jamley is. It was all just on the knuckles all the time. And it wasn't until I had kids and it was like, you don't have time for it. That I met all these people that were like, man, we should play together and we should be a band and
you've got
hey, that's
taste
pretty
in music.
Good.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
And I'm already in my like late 20s, early 30s, and ever since I've been able to play with people, it's a struggle. Every single time, it's been a struggle.
Struggle?
The struggle of like walking out of the house and like
oh,
just leaving,
right.
You know,
schedules.
The struggle.
Got it.
With all the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it's cool to reference another podcaster, but my primary influence and one of the only guys that I really listen
to. There's varying opinion on that.
Maren says there's no late to the party anymore in terms of like, you know, if you find a band that everybody's known for 20 years or whatever, who the fuck cares? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a competition. And like the fact that you got started when you did, it's unfortunate in a way. I mean, it makes me feel sad.
Super sad.
That you went through those years and just had that string of bad luck between, you know, disapproving uncles and lame friends. But you got there. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to force a silver lining.
No matter how you got there, though, you got there.
Yeah, there's no
late
to
that
party.
About a lot of things, yeah.
LL Cool J says, dreams don't have deadlines.
Ooh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
What does LL Cool J stand for? Yeah. What's the LL? Anyone?
I've heard it. I've heard it in the culture, but I don't know.
Ladies love Cool James.
I mean, that's not a guy who's in his 50s by now. He should not. Let's change that.
It's time to amend it.
I mean, yeah.
Grandchildren love Cool
J. He's got grandchildren.
Is he on CSI? Is LL Cool J on CSI?
Oh, yeah. I think he is on a... Primetime show.
Mama said, knock you out.